Rabbi Sachson Gabay.
Okay. Thank you, Howie. As usual, for the opportunity to come learn with you guys. Enjoyed it last time. Our work was cut out for us our last year, which, if I'm not mistaken, I was right before. Was it right before Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur? Was it right before Sukkot, maybe? I have a theory that whenever, like, all the other rabbis, like, you know, right before the Chagim, they want to be home, help the wives, do the shopping, and Howie emails me, he goes, so, like, the last slot before Yom Kippur, could you do it? And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I'm smarty, I don't need to help out in the kitchen, you know, I'll take that one, I'll take this slot before Pesach cleaning, don't worry about it. So I'm beginning to see a theme, so I expect my next call will be before Shavuos, and then we'll...
That's a show.
Bli neder. Okay, so we have our work cut out for us tonight. We often hear and use this term, a miracle. And certainly in the month of Nisan, certainly with the approaching of the Seder, that term is most certainly referenced a lot. It's used a lot, that word, and it's often used to characterize and categorize different events that occur. With that being said, there is a halachic definition to a miracle. And what I'd like to do tonight is to, for a few minutes, to focus on the circumstance where that word needs to be defined. It's not to be used euphemistically, it's not to be used casually in a conversation, but there's going to be a technical definition which we're going to have to, in the dictionary next to the word miracle, we're going to have to put what that term means. And the context of that, of where we have to define that, and the reason we have to define that is found in source number one. If you take a look at on the first, should be on flipping onto the page, on the first source. We have a Gemara, really a Mishnah actually, in Gemara in Brachos on Nun Dalet Amud Aleph. And the Mishnah there has the following case. Haro Makom Shenasu Bo Nisim LiYisrael. Again, I'm in the first source, the Mishnah. Someone who comes across a place where a miracle occurred for Bnei Yisrael. Omer Baruch Sha'asa Nisim La'avoteinu B'makom Hazeh. They are required to make this bracha of Sha'asa Nisim, that the miracles were performed here for our forefathers, B'makom Hazeh, in this place. The Gemara elaborates in source number two. Mina Hanemili. How do I know that when I come across this place where a miracle occurred for the Jews, that I have to go ahead and make this bracha? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan da Amar Kra Vayomer Yitro. Yitro comes and he says, Baruch Hashem Asher Hitzil. You don't have the rest of the pasuk there, forgive me, but it says Asher Hitzil Tchem Yad Mitzrayim Umiyad Paro, and the pasuk goes on. This is as he's coming and he approaches Bnei Yisrael, he comes to meet them in the desert, and he exclaims this idea where it says, Baruch Hashem Asher Hitzil Tchem. That blessed are you, that blessed is Hashem, that He has saved you. The Gemara learns from this that when one comes across a place where a miracle occurred, then I would have to go ahead, and it would be a requisite upon me to go ahead and to make that bracha. Just an interesting question. When Yitro approached the camp, was he there where the miracle of, let's say, Kriyas Yamsuf or Yitzias Mitzrayim occurred? He came to them in the desert. So it's a little bit strange, right? The source that we learn from, that when you come across a place that a miracle occurred, you make a bracha, is learned based off of a pasuk where seemingly Yitro came across a place where that miracle had not occurred. He was referencing Kriyas Yamsuf. He may have been referencing Matan Torah. He was referencing Yitzias Mitzrayim. Why is it that we learn from that source? So there's a few answers given in the Rishonim. One answer is that there were other miracles that were occurring when he approached the camp. In other words, he saw the Anani HaKavod, the cloud, he saw Bear Miriam, he saw the well, he saw various things. And we'll see later on that if you see one miracle occurring, if you come up to a place where one miracle occurs, you could reference the past other miracles that occurred as well as part of that same context. So that's one answer. The other answer is, and again, it's not our focus for tonight, but if I come across someone who actually themselves underwent a miracle, I can make a bracha as well. That's not the case we're discussing tonight, but Yitro certainly came across and he came face to face with people who underwent a miracle, which would warrant him making the bracha. But that's just tangential. But that's where we learn the source from. The source is from this meeting and this incident of Yitro. So the Gemara goes on, and I'm on the second line in source number two. Anisa de Rabbim Mevarchim. If a nace occurred, if a miracle occurred for the rabbi, and I'm using that word, I'm not defining that word, translating that word on purpose. What does it mean? Rabbim, how many people, how great of a people, but it's referring to, it occurred to a group, a large group of people, many people, let's just say, right? So we know that a person would have to make a bracha. But a nisi de yachid lo mevarchim, if a miracle occurred to an individual, does that not warrant a bracha either? So the Gemara relates the following incidents. Ahu gavra, dehave ka azia be'evri yamina, that he was there was this individual who was crossing Avri Amino, which is just south of the Euphrates, Rashi says on this Gemara. Nafla lea arye, a lion fell upon him. It aved le nise vitatsamine, and a miracle occurred and he was saved from it. Atal kameh de Rava, this individual who survived this lion attack, he comes to Rava va'amar le, and Rava responded to him, kol ema tematit lahatam, any time you chance upon that place where this incident with the lion occurred, you should make that bracha. So here you have an individual who underwent something which was seemingly miraculous, and Rava instructed him to make a bracha. Another interesting case. So Marbir de Ravina. One time Marbir de Ravina havikal azil be picked at the Arvos. He was traveling through the valley of Arvos. He became very thirsty while wandering through the barren land. Itavid le nisei, a miracle occurred for him. A well of water sprung up. It was created out of thin air, seemingly, and he was able to drink from it. Further, he was once going through the shuk in Muxa, the marketplace. And a wild camel fell upon him. It's Parik Le Ishta. There was a house next to him that had a wall, and the wall fell down out of nowhere, and he was able to escape in there. Al lagave, he escaped into that house, which a second ago there was a wall there, a second later the wall is no longer there. He runs into the house, and al lagave, running into the house, he was able to be saved. Kimata la Arvos, when he came to Arvos, where that miracle occurred, where the well was created for him, so he should say, Barich, Barcho Salines be Arvos Ubagama. He references both places where that miracle occurred, both in Arvos and with the camel. And in addition to that, so when he comes across to the place where the incident in the marketplace occurred, kimata l'risko demuchsa barich barcho salines pagamo va'arvos. He again, he makes a bracha referencing both incidents. So here you have three incidents that occurred, and an individual underwent something which seemingly was miraculous, right? The Gemara is defining that term as miraculous, those incidents, and that individual was instructed to go ahead and to make a bracha. So the Gemara says, so you see that there is such a thing for an individual to also make a bracha if they undergo a miracle. So the Gemara answers as follows. Anisa de Rabbim, on a miracle that occurred for Rabbim, for a group, a large group of people, Kule Amo Mechayve Levarche. Everyone, even those who are not present, me, you, whoever it is, we all have an obligation to go ahead and make a bracha. Anisa de Yachin, on a miracle that occurred to an individual, only the individual themselves is obligated to go ahead and to make a bracha. So far, so good. This is just, we're building the foundation. So you have a few incidents where the Gemara is saying that these were warrants, and we're seemingly calling them a miracle because halakhically they will fit the qualification where this bracha would go ahead and be said. The Tanur Rabbanan goes on in the next paragraph, and again, we're not going to, for the sake of time, we're not going to go too deep into it, but it goes even a step further. It talks about if you saw where Kriyas Yamsov occurred, which is the classic case, if you saw where the Kriya occurred, where Yoshua crossed into the Jordan, if you see where Nachle Arnon occurred, which is a fascinating incident, the Gemara there explains, Kal Yisrael was walking through a valley. Behind them, behind Kal Yisrael, as they're walking in the desert, there are two people who were Metzoras. So they were outside of the camp, and as Kal Yisrael was walking through the valley, unbeknownst to them, if I'm not mistaken, there were Moabites hiding in the walls of the valley, and they were laying there waiting to ambush Bnei Yisrael as they were walking through. However, the Midrash tells us that when the Aron Kodesh was in front of Klal Yisrael, it would demolish and level any sort of highs and lows and mountains and peaks, so Bnei Yisrael wouldn't have, you know, upward and downward type of trekking. So you have these people who are waiting in the little nooks and crannies of the valleys, and obviously the Aron Kodesh is in front of them, so the Aron Kodesh, what does it do? It levels the place out, and all those who were waiting to ambush Klal Yisrael, they ended up dying. Bnei Yisrael had no idea this occurred. What happened that they found out later? So those two Metzoras who were waiting in the back of the camp, they all of a sudden see blood coming from behind Klal Yisrael. And they realize, wait a minute, there were people there and seemingly they must have gotten killed. And they put one and one together and they put the puzzle together. So that was a miracle. So again, the Bracer, the Tanna Rabbanan there goes through a list of miracles that if one comes across that place, they would go ahead and they would make this bracha. And this isn't just a theoretical Gemara. Shulchan Aruch passes this way as well. If you take a look in Shulchan Aruch, in source number 3, in Hilchos, in Hilchos Brachos Simen Reish Yud Ches, the Shulchan Aruch brings all this lehalacha. In Sif Aleph, that first paragraph, Haora Makom Shnasu Bo Nisim Leisrael, if you see in a place where miracles occurred for Bnei Yisrael, and then it lists all those cases of the Brisa, it says you're going to say the Bracha, and you're going to say it with Shema Machos, talks about the Din of Vidikor to some people, not all people. What does that mean? How often do you have to frequent that place? If you haven't seen it for 30 days, then you would say it. But if you see it within 30 days, then again, you wouldn't make the bracha necessarily. All these type of things. If it happened to your parents, if it happened to your Rebbe, various situations in terms of when you would go ahead and make a bracha. Mara further goes on, the sources later go on, you have in source number 6 and 7 for you, I believe, which is the Torah, the Shulchan Aruch as well, talks about what's considered for an individual, that's not considered for an individual, the children of that person, the grandchildren, various definitions in terms of when these would apply. Source number 8, which for you, if I'm not mistaken, it's the Me'iri for you, the Beis HaBechira, correct? Source number 8 is really where our work begins. And at this point, I want you to take a mental recollection of what were the cases in the Gemara that we discussed, and the fact of those were brought lahalacha. Says the Me'iri as follows on the Gemara Brachos that we just read. Okay, source number 8: Nisim elu mevarchem aleihem. On these miracles which were listed, you'd make a bracha on them. Yesh omrim. There are those that say dafka b'neis gadol. Only if it's a big miracle. Neis gadol, he says. Hayotze migedro shel olam. That it's beyond the realm of what typically would happen in the world, let's say. Aval neis katan, but a small miracle, kagon, shebolo, ganavim, or gedude chaya, velistim, he was attacked by a group of bandits or wild animals or whatever it may be, ein mavarech alav. You wouldn't make a brach on that situation. Quotes that opinion. He goes on, veladati, in my opinion, kol neis ha'asur liyached, anything miraculous that occurs to an individual, mavarech alav. That would warrant for a bracha to be made. Shekol neis etzol yachid, anything that occurs to a specific individual, if their life is saved by it, he says, it's a neis gadol for that person. But when it comes to making a neis shel rabim, if I come across a place where, you know, some fantastic incident occurred for a large group of Bnei Yisrael, so there, says the Me'iri, we have another rule. Neis shel rabim, ein mevarech en alav, ela kishu neis gadol. Only if it's a neis gadol. What does a neis gadol mean? So it would probably mean, let's say, the type of cases that the Gemara described, right? Like a Kriyas Yamsov type of case, a Kriyas Yarden type of case. Those type of extraordinary occurrences. And in that situation, when a neis gadol occurs for a group of people, then I would go ahead and make the bracha. But for an individual, the Me'iri says, even a neis katan works. Says the Rivash. The Rivash, in source number 9, has a Tshuva and Simen, Shin Lamed Zayin, where he was asked by someone, similar sugya, related to our sugya, but it's not our sugya, in terms of when we say Birchas HaGomel. Our Gemara is on Nun Dalet Amud Aleph and continues on to Nun Dalet Amud Beis. The Gemara Nun Dalet Amud Beis is really where the whole sugya of Birchas HaGomel and the details of that is where it occurs. So the Rivash was asked the following question. Are the cases that are listed in the Gemara for Birchas HaGomel, what are the four cases? Someone who goes through, crosses over a large body of water, goes through a desert, was released from prison, or went through, survived or had a refuah from some sort of illness. So those are the four. So the person asked the Rivash, is it limited to those four that I would make a Gomel on, or is it beyond that as well, that I would make a Birchas HaGomel? Take a look at the bolded part. Of the tshuva of what I bolded for you. And again, just a general rule as you go through the source sheets, whether it's the sources I covered tonight or the sources which if you'd like to take home to look over yourselves, anything bolded and underlined there, my own emphasis, they're not the emphasis of the author. So just keep that within context. So he says here in the bold, V'kol shekein hanasa lo neis, some a miracle that occurred to an individual, nitzo memisa atzma, and they were saved from death, we just got a new definition in our dictionary. Okay? Nitzo memisa atzma. that if a person was going to die and they didn't die, seemingly, he says, that bracha would be made. And then he quotes our Gemara, Kadamrina Bereish Perikaroa, etc., etc., etc. So you have the Me'iri, to keep things within context, right? You have a Me'iri who says that it's this distinction between Neis Gadol and a Neis Katan. And then you have the Rivash, who says seemingly nothing about a Neis Gadol or a Neis Katan, but seemingly his qualification is that if I was saved from a life-threatening situation. Not everyone agrees with this Rivash, and they actually try to interpret the Rivash differently, because they have such difficulty with it. If you take a look onto the next, it starts on the bottom of the page and continues on to the next page, the Radbaz, which is source number 10, he can't believe that such a thing would be said. And he says, and I'm going to the bolded part within the paragraph, V'yesh Omrim, She'ein Tzarech Lavarech, there's those opinions who say that you would only make a bracha, Ela al Neis Chadash Hu Maisa Shemayim. Only for a Neis Chadash. That's the terminology he uses, which is what? Maisa Shemayim, Kimakom Shnasubo Nisim Lavotenu. Like the ones listed in our Gemara, the splitting of the sea. That's what we're going to call a miracle. You want to be able to make this bracha, you want to use Shem Hashem to make this bracha, you need to go through the splitting of the sea, you need to go through a neis, a chadash, so to speak, to be able to make that bracha. The Beis Yosef, in source number 11, he also is struggling with this idea. He quotes the Avud Raham. He says that me'arosh ve'kasav Avud Raham b'shem harosh mi'vilna eim revarachan ala neis ela b'neishu yotze mimin haga olam. Only if it's a miracle that was out of this world, literally, out of this world type of situation. Aval neishu min haga olam. It's something nice occurred. You know, it was an interesting maisa. Again, I'm being somewhat pessimistic, right? But it's a min haga olam through the normal course of nature, you and I would say, okay? Then, in such a situation, says the Beis Yosef, that wouldn't warrant saying the bracha. The Shulchan Aruch brings both these opinions of halacha. He says, Yesh Omrim, in source number 12, Ein Mevarach al Neis, El Beshu Neis, Yotze Mimin Haga Olam, Aval Neis, Shu Min Haga Olam, and Toltosav. But if it is something that is, again, within the criteria of day-to-day activity, then you wouldn't make a bracha on it. V'yesh cholek, and some argue that even on that case you would make a bracha. And he ends off by saying, Tov levarech below eskar shem machos. Better to say it without the shame hamachos. Magen Avraham is incredulous. In source number 14, he says, V'yesh cholek, there's someone that disagrees and says that on a neis that's within the minhag olam, you're going to make a bracha. Impossible, says the Magen Avraham. Lo matzasi, I did not find misha cholek. That someone who would argue on this position. How could someone even begin to think of an opinion, the Hakrei Neis, to refer to a miracle? Something which is natural. It's impossible. I can't imagine it. The Machatzis HaShekel in source number 14 quotes the Eli Rabbah as well. They tried to reinterpret the Rivash we quoted. They have the Me'iri. They're trying to figure things out. The Mishnah Berurah and the Bir Halacha in source number 16 and 17, they're struggling with this idea as well, in terms of quoting these opinions. What's considered natural, not natural, whether they should make that bracha or not. And again, they quote both. The Bir Halacha says, you know, how far are you going to take this? Are you going to refer to someone who has a child, delivers a child? Nobody would even say that's a miracle, right? That's too far off the spectrum, right? Everyone's trying to struggle with this idea. And that brings me to source number 18. You have a lot of opinions that I just quoted for you. You have opinions that are trying to say Neis Gadol, Neis Katan. So if I would ask you today, you went through the sources with me, you saw the Magen Avraham exclaiming, Eich Yala Ladas, how could you even think it? But you saw others who say, you know, maybe on a personal one, how could it be the Me'iri says it's a Neis Gadol on an individual? If an individual's life was saved, how could you not feel, how could that individual not feel it's a miracle? So I want to put it to a vote. We're in America, like democracy officially. We just voted in Israel. So we're going to vote here. Which opinion makes sense to you? Which one would you refer to as a miracle? How many people would say that the only thing you could refer to a miracle, let's say it's the Magen Avraham Shita, right? Others obviously subscribe to this as well. But let's just refer to it as the Magen Avraham. That it has to be something that's Yotze Midarecha Miteva Ha'olam. Something that's beyond this world, and only that is what we consider a miracle. Who votes for that option? No one? You vote for that. Okay. How many people think it's even something which is, again, a person's life was saved. The splitting of the sea did not occur. There was no Kriyas Yam Suf by any means. But there was something that occurred, again, within the rules of nature. And ultimately that led to something that was, you know, that was quite astounding. And maybe we refer to that as a miracle. How many people subscribe to that position?
Is say Al Nisim on Purim, and it's like, you know, it's like...
Good! If Al Nisim is said on Purim, so you got a big struggle with that, right? So there are people that give answers to how... You have to figure that out, right? It's a great point. Many people struggle with that. Leaving Al Nisim aside, because let's say I could give you an answer for Al Nisim. What does your gut tell you? Because... Don't worry, we're not going to listen to your gut. We're going to go through the sources all together, so it's okay. But what is your... Which one do you feel makes sense? Howie?
The second one.
That you would call it... And what about the Magen Avraham? Hei ala aladas. That's what you're going to refer to a miracle. You would say hagomel on it, but he's saying to say this bracha, sha'asa lines, that's a stretch. So let me make it a little bit less hypothetical for you. Okay? Let's say you have a case where you have soldiers in one of the Lebanon wars, and they crossed into Lebanon in the middle of the night, and they needed a place to sleep that night. So they see a large house, a compound. And they said, you know what, this looks like a good place to rest, but you have to make sure it's clear, it's safe, there's no issues. So they send a few bomb specialists to the house. They say, please go ahead, make sure the structure is fine, the house isn't booby-trapped. So they send a pair of bomb technicians to the house. They go look, they inspect, da-da-da. They give the okay. 200 soldiers come, Israeli soldiers come, and they go ahead and they sleep there and they settle in for the night. One soldier goes out of the house in the middle of the night to relieve himself. And all of a sudden, beneath one of the corners of the house, he sees wires protruding. So immediately, goes over, calls everyone out of the house. You had 200 soldiers sleeping in there. The house was fully wired, fully booby-trapped. They expected this. They thought this scenario would occur, the terrorists. And you had 200 soldiers who were saved. In such a case, would they make the bracha of Sha'asa Lines Makom Hazeh? So you have a tshuva. Source number 18. Rav Zilberstein and Chashuchi Chamin. Maise b'chayalim. That there was an incident that occurred with these soldiers. And it's just as I explained to you. And he goes on, they all came out, none of them were hurt, could have been terrible. They quickly ran out of the house. I'm in the last line of that first paragraph, Yotsu Maher Miyabayas, Bizahirus, below Lidro Khalachutim. They quickly ran out, making sure not to trip on any of the wires. Haim Yivarchu, Birchat Sha'asalines. Do they make this bracha that you and I have been discussing for the last few minutes together? Tshuva, the second paragraph. If you had come to ask me whether they would say Birchas Hagomel, they would be obligated to make Birchas Hagomel. Kevan, again, the criteria for Hagomel is different. It's a lower criteria, which is Shahayu b'makom sakana, if they were in a dangerous situation, v'nitzul mamenu b'hashkacha pratit, and in some form of hashkacha pratit, divine intervention, let's just say, they were ultimately saved, then they would go ahead and they would make this the Birchas Hagomel. But he says when it comes to the bracha of Sha'asa Lines, right? And I'm in the third to last line, Vashelahi, the first one on the line is Rak. Rak ha'im yivarchu birchat Sha'asa Lines, whether they should make that bracha, nire shebezeh ein mevarchen. I would say that they would not make that bracha. Af sheha atzala ha'isa b'derech hashkacha pratit, even though there is definitely some form of, let's say, divine intervention to prevent them from being killed and sleeping in that house for the rest of the night, but there was no Kriyas Yamsuf that occurred. Kevan Sha'atzala lo haisa b'derech neis. That was not b'derech neis. Ela b'derech hateva ein mevarchen, he says. So let me ask you another question. And again, I added this just today to the sources. Okay? You have in source number 19, another case. Okay? This is from the famous Sefer. This is a follow-up to the well-known Sefer of Rav Mandelbaum on Zos HaBracha. So he wrote a secondary Sefer, like a Hashlama to it. And he comes up with the following case. During the Gulf War, the first Gulf War, 91, 92. When was the first Gulf War? I think it was 91, if I'm not mistaken. But I could be wrong. So you had the Scud attacks that were occurring in Eretz Yisrael, right? They were being attacked from Iraq. The missiles were coming down. Scud missiles were coming down. And what occurred? You had a room full of people, okay, that were in this house. And the Scud missile came onto the house. But what happened? The missile didn't implode. Didn't go off. It wasn't live. So they wanted to know whether they should make that bracha or not. So take a look in the second paragraph here in source number 19. I know it's a little bit of a grainy picture. V'chein hora gon Rav Zilberstein, and again in his tshuva, shadavar dome lemavor b'mishnah berurah sheim nafla even osha avra. You would make birchas hanisim, and what is the logic for it? Shehateva hu, the natural course of events that would have occurred in that situation is what? Sheyamos, is that that person would have been killed. Vehu nitzel manisa, and ultimately that person was saved from death. Okay? So therefore, he says, again, at least for Bnei Ashkenaz, Bnei Edom Mizrach, it could be a little bit different, because by us, making a bracha lebatala is a daraisa issue, not necessarily so for Ashkenazim. But he says, at least for the Ashkenazim, the natural course of events occurs, is that when a Scud missile is launched from Iraq, and it ultimately crosses into Israel, and it comes and it's pointed to a house from a room full of people, what would typically happen in a situation like that, Rahman al-Atslan? It would explode, and everyone could die, God forbid. That's the natural course of what should occur, right? Sha'atava hu shehimos. That would be what would naturally occur. And nature, quote-unquote, was broken. And no one passed away. I don't need a Kriyas Yamsuf to occur. I don't need this overwhelming lightning and thunder type of act to consider that a miracle. But rather, he says, even in such a scenario, that would be sufficient. So all of a sudden, this becomes a little bit more nuanced, at least according to these opinions, right? So what about the following scenario? You had someone who went through the concentration camps in Europe. And a common question, and you see many responses about this, through the 1900s, the second half of the 1900s obviously, is people dealing with the following case, especially in the 60s and 70s and 80s. You had more and more people going and visiting the camps. You had people going and touring and visiting and recounting, and people would take trips with survivors. You have multiple trips that happened like that. So the question came up, did the survivors who went through the horrendous situations in those camps, which are so difficult for us to even fathom, to imagine the cruelties that they underwent, would they make that bracha when they approached the camp or not? So what would you say? So on one hand, you could say, maybe it depends. It depends how they survived. You know, there are responsa that are written about certain individuals who they were standing far away, and one of the camp guards became very upset at them. They started shooting, and it was not a tremendously far distance between the shooter and the person in the concentration camp. And somehow, none of the bullets, all the shots missed. He didn't get it. So maybe in that situation, you could say like, how is that? That's so hard to imagine. Like that would be something very difficult to say. Miracle, not miracle. But let's come with a question that's a little bit more complex. They went through the camps, and I'm not trying to belittle this by any means, but you're going to see it's not my own words. I'm going to put forth in front of you two different positions, two different tshuvas, which are in direct conflict with each other. They went through the camps. There was no one shooting 20 bullets at them. And there was no one shooting, you know, there was no Kriyas Yamsuf type of miracles that occurred. Again, I'm just sort of putting things within context. I wouldn't say that they just survived, because Chas V'Shalom, it's hard to even to relate to even an iota of what that meant. But they survived. Either if they were on the Eastern Front, then there were the camps or the work camps on the Eastern Front. They were ultimately liberated by the Russian army. And if they were on the camps on the Western Front, depending where and how, most of those camps were liberated by, majority of them were by American forces. A little here and there, French and British, but majority were American forces, if I'm not mistaken. That's how they survived. There was no Kriyas Yamsuf, there was no, right? That was their survival. So if they go and they visit those camps, would they make that bracha or not? So says the tshuva of Rav Menashe Klein, source number 20, I believe this is 20 for you. He says as follows. Again, he's talking about another case here that occurred where these two individuals were going. They somehow got stuck on a piece of ice. No one thought that they would be able to find them. And somehow they were miraculously survived against all odds. Okay? And he says as follows. V'nira shehu adin. And I'm looking here to see if you have it, and I hope you do, but I apologize if I didn't include it. Maybe I'll read it outside for you very quickly. V'nira shehu adin. Again, it's this tshuva, it's just on the lower half, which I apologize. L'gabe mi shesharis amachno. Someone who went through the camps, Okay? V'zacha l'chaim, and ultimately they survived. V'yigia l'oso makom b'shenis, and they came back as a visitor. Im nasid lo nes, if there was a nes that occurred, hayotze migeder ha'olam, that was beyond the natural occurrence of within this world, v'nitzol, and he was ultimately saved, yibarach shasa li nes, ulan. If, however, lo dugma, his tater v'lo yivchinu bo, he hid and they didn't find him, and that was how he survived. Oh, sha'avres kol hatlos perav v'tzama. He went through all the hunger and the thirst. B'mako skuf, through the pains. V'nefesh v'lo haya nes yotze migeder ha'olam. And ultimately, there was no miracle that was beyond this world that occurred. Ela kol seder chayim hala normali. Quote unquote, his entire life was normali, whatever that means. And Rav Nasha Klein himself was someone who lived during the war years. So this is not foreign to him. Okay. But he says they went through the camps as that. Ve'igia es moed shechor, and ultimately they came the time where they were freed from the machnos. V'lo hayu b'sakanas misa, they were not in a death threatening situation, okay, and they weren't saved from a miracle. He says in such he paskins nira she'eno mevarech eno roi sheyavarech al hanes, they wouldn't want to make a bracha to be said. It's quite a chiddush. But that's his position. And you know where he's coming from. If you would just read it on its own, you would say, how could I even understand that? But you see the progression of the sources that we've gone through who have struggled with this point of what we define as a miracle. But Bezalel Stern, in source number 21, he has a very difficult time relating to this. So he says as follows. Yishalti harbe pamim. I've been asked many times, mibnei adam shahayu b'shnos hashoah, that who lived during the time of the Holocaust, atzurim be'echas me'amachnos, they were captive in one of these camps, shal hanatzim yimachshamam, o bechemlas Hashem, and with God's mercy, nitzol lechayim, they were ultimately saved for life. Im kasher yechu levakir b'machna hahu, if they go ahead and they visit that camp, tzrichim hem levarich, whether they should make that bracha sham, baruch shasali neis makom hazeh, just like it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. And in the first paragraph there with an aleph, he in order to try to answer this question, he talks about this idea. And I'll say the idea outside for the sake of time. Where you have a case of a Shulchan Aruch, where the Shulchan Aruch discusses that if ganavim come to someone in the middle of the night, and they go ahead and they steal his things, or not in the middle of the night, let's say they're walking, they break into his home, he was ambushed, he was mugged, whatever it is, Shulchan Aruch says you don't make the bracha of Shasalim Nitz Makom Hazeh. However, the Shulchan Aruch Harab says that if robbers come to you in the middle of the night, and they come into your home, and they break into your home, and ultimately you survive, then you would make the bracha of Shasalim Nitz Makom Hazeh. So what he tries to figure out, Rav Bezalel Stern, is he's saying, what's the difference? That in one case I would make the bracha, one case I wouldn't. And he says very, very beautifully. If you take a look onto the next page, he says in the middle of that base, the paragraph base, it's the second paragraph he has here. Maybe it's even better. Let's do a paragraph that starts with Gimel, the second full paragraph you have on the page. V'anir b'siyata d'shmaya. The language that the Shulchan Aruch uses is very insightful here, right? Because it says, in the case of the Shulchan Aruch, which says you don't make the bracha, there was no danger there. And because there was no danger, he says that they you wouldn't make that bracha. Ultimately, we assume him einon b'ayim rak lignov v'ayim b'layla. They're just coming to take a few items in the night. V'osim b'mechshak maseim. They don't want any trouble, and they just want to go in, go out, take their stuff, and leave. They don't want to even confront. They hope they don't see anyone. They hope they're not confronted by anyone. But he says in the next paragraph where it's bolded, lo chein ba'u alav listim. This is not the case when listim come. Why? Because listim uzyanim shetachlis biyasa. The whole purpose and the reason that they're coming, they want to go ahead and they're waiting for a confrontation. This is like a case of a Baba Machteris sort of, right? It's indicative of that sort of mentality, right? They want that. They're willing to take whatever objects they want from them by force. And if the homeowner defends himself and he puts up a fight to try to keep his possessions, presumably, these type of robbers, they're going to kill him. So he goes on and he pretty much says that it seems to be that the distinction is what would have been the natural sequence of events that occurred. Is the natural sequence of events that occurred that typically these type of robbers come and they're going to kill you, in which case the Shulchan Aruch Rav Paskin you would make the bracha? Or is it the type of case where the Shulchan Aruch describes, where he says if these type of people come, you wouldn't go ahead and make the bracha because they're not the ones to put your life in danger? And that's the distinction, and that's the warranting factor of whether to make the bracha. Mi'ata, I'm in the paragraph that starts with a dalet. But nidon didan, in terms of a visitor going to the concentration camps, someone who survived. When we know that their entire purpose, their entire ideology, the mentality was that they wanted to kill, destroy, and ultimately annihilate. Oh, they didn't want there to be even an ounce of a remnant of Klal Yisrael. At the end of the day, what was the purpose of these camps other than the fact to ultimately kill the Jews, he says. Even if in the beginning they just gave them work, it was a work camp, it was a working type of scenario, they were really there to torture them, to suffer them. They wanted to weaken them and they wanted to ultimately just profit off their labor for free. Aval, even in those scenarios where they wanted the work, lo hisichu daitam, lerega, not for one moment did their minds wander from their ultimate purpose, mehariga v'hashmada, to kill and to destroy. And we know historically that that's extremely accurate. You know, towards the end of the war, you had the German army, the Nazis, they had a wide area of land which they ultimately had to defend. And from a political and a military standpoint, one of their Achilles' heel was ultimately fighting a battle on two fronts. Any general will tell you, you want to fight as few battles on as few fronts as you possibly can. But they were fighting the Russians on the east, and ultimately they were fighting the Western allies on the west. And in a scenario like that, you would say that you need to make sure that your supplies are crossing from one front to the other so that you know you have the resources you need. Fuel, food, rations, etc. And they had an extensive railway. So what would you do if you're a general and you're trying to win this war and you have this extensive railway at your disposal? You would make sure that the resources that you're garnering from one side of the country are reaching the other one. So if one side has an abundant access of fuel, you make sure that goes to the other front. If one has an abundant access of raw material, of concrete, or of food, you make sure it gets to the other side. And you have this railway infrastructure. Use it. But what did the Nazis do? They used even those railways at the very end, to the frustration of some of their generals, to transport Jews, to make sure that they were able to move Jews from one place to the other to ultimately mete out the destruction. The entire context of what was occurring there, to his point, was ultimately, as he said, not for one second did they lose their focus, lahashmi, laharo gulavish. That was what their focus was, from start to finish. Statistically speaking, the chance of survival once you were in the camps, again, and it varied from camp to camp, but just one that I saw earlier today, was 4%. Yet a person, Rahman al-Salam, had a 96% chance to be killed, to die in one of these camps. If you were Jew and hungry, there were 400,000 Jews deported, 120,000 ultimately survived. In Poland, that had a Jewish community of 3 million, 300,000 survived. The chances of any sort of survival were against. So says Rav Bezalel Stern, why am I sharing these statistics with you? Because again, what is the natural occurrence of events that would occur if an army is so bent on destroying someone that they're going to throw away their chance of winning the war in order to focus and use their railway to transport for the murdering of Jews? What is their chance for someone, the natural chain of events that would occur if, again, 4% chance of survival once a person entered the camps? Says Rav Bezalel Stern, how is it possible that you wouldn't consider that a miracle? You know, I think we talk about, and we use this phrase miracle a lot, and certainly a week from tomorrow night when we're sitting down at the Seder, the Ikra Mitzvah is to recount and to discuss the miracles that occur. And it's so easy when discussing and relating and we're sitting with our families and we're fulfilling them, Chiyuv D'Oraisa of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, to saying, here's what occurred to us here, here's what occurred to us at Kriyas Yam Suf. And Kriyas Yam Suf is easy to imagine. Right? You can imagine and relate to that as a miracle. You're astounded by it. You really stop for a moment and think, what does it mean that the walls parted, were cornered by three sides, says the Medrash, and they escaped through the water, they came out of the other side, here they're chased by a powerful army and a group of slaves that were just freed. What kind of Rahmanas Hashem had for us? But on the very second to last page, I shared with you a Ramban, and for the sake of time, I don't want to do it inside. It says the Ramban, that's easy to call a miracle. But there's every little daily occurrence that occurs to us, as well as a miracle. the fact that I'm able to live, to breathe, and says Rav Shimshon Pinkus, that the fact that I'm able to even open her fridge and I see food in it, goes, you don't think that's something to be taken for granted? I'm going to just tell you something that occurred to me yesterday. I went on the Tomchei Shabbos of Bergen County website. And this isn't an appeal for Tomchei Shabbos. I don't have any involvement with them, to be honest. I can't even tell the name of one person involved with the organization. Okay? But you go to the website and it tells you, here's how much it is for food for one family, a small family for Pesach. Here's how much it is for food for a medium-sized family for Pesach. Here's how much, and you read that, and you just read the different, you know, options for donating. And how is it possible to not walk away from such a scenario with some sense of appreciation and say that when I open my food or when I go shopping or whatever it is, there can't be some akharas atof to that? I can't stop and think how many people there are who need refuah shlemas, who need things, basic things that they need, that they require. And to not refer to that in one way or the other within the context of a miracle, it would not be sincere to what the whole message of Pesach is. Because at the end of the day, the ultimate goal of the Seder is to come to this realization of Hashem's benevolence to us, all the miracles that He does for us. And through that, we reach that pinnacle, that holy moment of Pesach, of coming closer to Hashem. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very, very much.
Take the whole thing. Include my coffee.
Shkoyach.
You're on time, right?
Perfect.